I don't know if we've talked about this, but I guess why not? Jordan and I have talked a lot about what is the AR-15 in 10 years.
Yeah. Pump action.
And Jordan is...
No fixed, bulls. Fixed stock.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, what is the... Let's say you could sell that gun as it is today. What companies are left?
Yeah.
You have to innovate because as we rise our tide, right? Why would you buy a insert company brand here? That'll be the interesting part.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it would affect you guys, but something I had thought about. Like if we actually learned to sell the products you did, then it would be like competition.
But yeah.
I don't think you're not going to go buy an Acro at Palmetto State Armory today.
Yeah, right.
maybe in 5 years.
Well, y'all are kind of, I guess we can touch. Actually, first, let's roll in to, is it too close?
That's good now.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
Can I drink?
Oh, yeah.
That's right. And these rotate too. So if it's in the way, you can just
get enough.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, we've got it.
You guys are a real professional outfit here. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We're dry.
We at least look like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, shit, I should have dressed up.
Dude, we're good.
Yeah.
We're good.
We've got a wide range. We've got business casual.
We got sexy as hell.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Like, shoes, dude.
It's the talent, okay?
Yeah. It's Navy. Though, if you walk through, it's obviously Navy is very in this season.
Yeah, it's the trendy color.
If you walk through the show, I'm like, wow, look at all these Navy dudes.
So much Navy.
So much Navy. Anyway.
So, yeah, anyways, this is the Big Tech Soreness podcast. I am Ike. We have Ian here. We have Chris. And then our guest today is Tom Victa from Palmetto State Armory. So...
Appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, dude, thank you so much for coming up and taking the time to talk with us for a little bit. And
absolutely. Get off the floor a little early. It's perfect.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah, it works out nice, huh?
And to follow on the conversation that we just stopped, but we're going to continue on here, I think what we have in competition-wise for PSA is sometimes we get the same deals from manufacturers and like EOTech.
Like EOTech, yeah.
That's right? So EOTech will... They're going to sell you 100 of them, and they're going to sell me 100 of them, and we both sold on the same price, and now we have to sell those. That's the only time that we're, I think, competing. But we're right along the same price point on those because we're both selling them.
Yeah,
both both paid the same amount for them. But,
absolutely.
But, dude.
But I can blend. That's the trick.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of how you got started in the gun industry, and kind of give us a little...
Little background
on it.
Yeah, sure. So, funny story, I guess. I graduated college in 2008. Best time ever. You know, all my friends got rescinded job offers.
Yeah.
The economy was in the shitter. So I went to grad school for a semester, tried to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, and about 3 weeks into grad school, I figured out that is not what I want to do with my life. So anyway, bounced around a little bit, some side jobs like when you're in college, and Craigslist. Somebody was looking for, I don't remember if it was a CAD guy or an engineer or something like that, but on Craigslist in my hometown, somebody wanted a CAD person. I wasn't even into guns, and you know, I shot a little bit growing up, like my stepdad, and I was around it, but it wasn't a huge thing. And started Adams Arms in 2009. So for you guys that don't know, that's piston ARs. That was the hotness back then. Everyone wanted a 416, but no one could have a 416. Yeah. So when I was in there, it was like 9 employees maybe.
Oh, wow.
So I got to do a little bit of everything. Didn't know what I was getting into. Had no idea. And that's kind of where it started. And... Worked there for a year and a half. And at the time, you know, this is rewinding. I'm not an old guy in guns, but the gun industry is definitely evolved. And at the time, got out. I was like, well, that was interesting. Worked in guns for a little bit. Then I called. I moved to Orlando. I was dating a girl at the time. Working at some nice... It was like a floating dock and marine company. So they built like docks and gangways. And I got a call one day from, I was maybe 24, 25. And I got a call one day, and it was a headhunter, and I had no idea what a headhunter was. And they so they're like, hey, you want to move to Washington, D.C. area? And I'm like, not really, but go on. So they're giving me this pitch, and I still wasn't really that into guns at the time. And so I called my mentor, well, not a mentor, a good friend, I would say. And I said, hey, man, what do you know about this company, Beretta? And he's like, well, what are you talking about? I'm like, I don't know. I just messed with some piston ARs and Wish was like, dude, when Beretta calls, you answer.
Yeah.
Like, that's what happens. So anyway, flew up for a job interview at the time. And this is the gun industry used to be a bunch of older guys, and that was their whole career. And then they kind of wound it down. And, you know, they were drawn on paper and they were getting into CAD, but it was pretty new. So I started with one guy was like in his early 70s, one in his late 50s, one that was like 60. And then like the next youngest guy in the design side was like 34 and I was like 25. And, I was a sponge. Like,
yeah.
That's where I got to meet so many people and just learn how, you know, essentially Beretta is one of the oldest industrial companies in the world, one of the oldest gun manufacturers in the world. And I'm like, who are they?
Yeah.
Like, what do they do?
Yeah.
So got to work on a bunch of, a couple little pistols. You know, I wasn't leading anything at the time. I was just helping out there, doing some shotgun work. And got exposed to Beretta USA and did that for a few years, and then got another headhunter called and said, you want to go to FN? And I'm like, who the hell's FN? So I was getting into sporting guns, but I didn't care anything about the military side.
Yeah.
And flew on down there and did pistol stuff for them. And that was huge. I love FN. I love what they're trying to do. I think it was a huge opportunity for me. So did that for a couple of years. And then,
can you talk about any of the projects you worked on over there? Or is it?
Sure. At Beretta, honestly, you're helping out with the Beretta Nano, which was their,
oh, yeah,
like their competitor, the single stack nine market. And then they thought they were going to take over. They're like, we're going to beat Carr. Like, all right. Okay. I could see that maybe. And then they were like 95% ready. And then the Smith & Wesson Shield dropped.
Yeah.
And that, like, changed everything. The whole world changed. So
oh, yeah.
It was an interesting time, so.
Yeah, I remember when both those came out, I was working at a gun shop at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. They had the annual expectation up here. They're like, then, we're going to crush it. And then Shield comes out, and you're like, oh, well, this is not the gun we thought it was.
Shoot.
Hopefully we haven't made too many of those.
Hi, I'm Chris from Big Tex
Ordnance, and I'm Ian from Big Tex
Ordnance. And today we've got the weekly update. So first off, from Voltor is the classic Myrrh upper receivers, right? So we've got them in foliage green, black, standard black. Those are my picks. What do you got over there?
For all the wheel gun enthusiasts out there, we've started carrying some Safariland Comp 3 and Comp 2 speed loaders for J frames and K frames. So if you guys need a good speed loader for all of your revolver needs, we got some. We have the new Streamlight Wedge XT also. These come in black and FDE. Great little task light. You know, drop your keys underneath the couch. You're looking for your burrito. Good little option from Streamlight. Comes with a little lanyard on it as well.
Solid price point on those. I'll have to reference the price point on those.
USB-C rechargeable, and it has a deep carry pocket clip on it.
Yeah, so option.
Looks great.
Coming up, there's a bunch of classes. We've got Paradox training. Gonna be across the street
at the
range. Doing that the 27th, not this weekend, but next weekend. Anyway, lots of training events coming up. We just also posted the Sons of Liberty.
Oh, yeah, the Armors
class. Armors class in May. It's up on the website. Anyway, thanks for watching.
Be safe.
Finger guns.
They hadn't made too many yet, but In the end, I mean, it was huge. I look back and I'm still in touch with a lot of the guys. And then some of them actually moved from Beretta to FN.
Oh, really?
Yeah. No, that's two guys. Luke is like the best gunsmith you'll ever meet. Went to gun. Well, maybe not the best, but he'll build double rifles. And then you're like, hey, man, I'm having this issue. What's going on? And he'll be like, well, pull up this book. there was a gun made this one time. And, you know, 15 minutes later, you're like, oh, well, you could have just said it was round jump, man. Like, but him and Rob Zimmerman, I was a sponge at the time, and they were there to teach. So it's pretty cool. So yeah. Beretta Nana for a little bit. Worked on a pump shotgun variant that I don't know if they ever actually went anywhere. It was an export tender for somewhere in Asia. And then a good amount of support work on the Beretta A300.
So okay.
They were trying to... I can't remember. Do you remember the gun before that? Their budget auto gun?
No.
The Nova?
390, maybe. Is it 390? Maybe the 390. But it was the first... maybe not the first, but it was their attempt at a cost-reduced, high-value product because everything out of Italy is, like, up here.
Yeah.
And then it's like, hey, how do we sell to the masses?
Yeah.
So then that's where I learned to hate Super Pheasant and Turkey Lids. So... Absolutely. Got a couple concussions, I think. So.
Oh, wow.
And then you moved over to FN, and what'd you work on over at FN?
So FN was interesting. So technically, I was on paper for FNA. So the way FN Herstal's set up, or just FN in general. So FN owns Browning, Winchester Firearms, not Winchester Ammo, and then FN Herstal, which is the FN that everybody knows. Mm-hmm. Well, so there's FN Herstal that's in Belgium, and then there's FNA, so, and they don't call it that anymore, but FN America, which was in Columbia, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. So they were originally set up, you know, when the government wanted to buy, I don't remember if it was mags or mini-me's, so 240s and 249s. Part of the stipulation to build them for the government is, hey, you got to build them in America. So they started that plan, I think, in the 80s.
Yeah.
And, long story short, you know, Herstal drives a lot of what America does because America is set up to support Herstal. Mm. Now, I think that's finally changing, so that's good. But when I came on to work in the pistol team to help them make a better pistol. So while I was technically an FNA employee, I definitely reported to a Belgian guy, and they're like, hey, go study guns. So maybe a year and a half of studying everything from Glock, Smith & Wesson, why did they do what they did? How do you take the FNS to that level? And for Belgium, you know, when you have a 240, 249, you know, they're selling all the, well, not all, a bulk of the M4s and M16s. They were getting into weapon systems. For them, they were like, I need a handgun. And they had a 5.7, mm-hmm. but... you know, they had a 9mm, the FNS9 was their striker-fired gun at the time. And it was perfectly great for commercial. But when you go in and you build the best machine guns in the world, how do you build the best pistols in the world? Yeah. You know, so worked for a year and a half with a guy named Laurent, who was a Belgian guy. And it was study guns. And so that's literally all we did was, I think in the end, I don't remember how long it was probably like a 70 to 100 page report, which is like a textbook of,
yeah,
if you're going to do a magazine, look at this one, do it like this. Here's all the deficiencies of all the different types of guns. You know, here's what Glock's doing well. Here's what Smith is doing well. Here's where the FNS is. How do we take it from here to there? And a lot of that ended up being the foundation for the MHS program. So I was there for a year and a half doing technical stuff. And my mentor was a product guy, and I just like talking products. I finally got into guns, and I was like, okay, if I'm going to be into it, I got to be all in. And let's see, it was probably about 2 years in. I got slowed down on a little bit of the growth, and then I kept applying for the product positions, and I couldn't get them. Like, they're like, no, we need you over here. We're looking for this kind of profile. So I said, all right, whatever. Applied to SIG. I don't know if I applied or got headhunted to go up there. And this was, everyone was spooling up for the MHS program that everybody knew was coming.
Right, which is, explain the MHS program.
So MHS was the modular handgun. So, you know, today you see the 320s one as the M17.
Right.
So the government, everyone knew the government was going to put out a solicitation for a new handgun. And the intention was, the name of the program was MHS, so modular handgun system. What they were looking for was, I don't remember how they exactly phrased it, but it was essentially a full size and a compact firearm that had ballistics capabilities equal or better to, well, I think it absolutely had to be better than the current M9. But then one of the big kickers was enablers and making sure, so the modularity was actually set aside around, they wanted to fit 5 to 95 percentile of hands and users. Mm-hmm. So you had to be ballistically better, and then you had to fit all kinds of gun or all kinds of users' hand shapes. SIG definitely went after the modular grip insert. They were kind of looking at, so they had their 250, which was their hammer fired chassis gun.
Yep.
I wish they still made those.
Didn't do. I actually like that gun.
I do as well.
It's not my favorite, but the idea of double, it's a nice double action trigger pull.
Yeah, double action only striker fired handgun kind of thing.
Yeah, and so they took their 320. So everybody did, and in typical FN fashion, we knew it was coming for like a very, very long time. And we're like, oh, it'll never happen. Don't work on it. Don't start work. So that's, well, I love FN. Sometimes proactivity is not their strong suit, I would say. And I think they're getting way better now, but that's neither here nor there. So it's going to go up to SIG, and they were building out a team. And this was, geez, I don't know, I have to pull up my LinkedIn, but 2015 maybe or so, 2015. And SIG was, you know, Ron Cohn was in charge, which was good. They were trying to turn into the SIG we see today. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, man, what are they doing? Like, they're trying to win. This is strange. Like, no one's trying to win in guns, you know? And they were doubling down on a lot of the effort. And I had a buddy that moved from FN up there, and he's like, oh, come on in. The water's warm. Land in Boston, Logan, picked up a rental car. And there's like 8-foot snow barrens on each side. And I'm like, dude, I don't think the water's that warm. I'll be honest with you.
The water looks cold.
Looks cold as hell. So, yeah. But I went up there and I loved it, man. They were committed. FN is slow but strategic. SIG is like, balls out, we're going to win. Like, I don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to figure it out. And they had some really smart technical people I interviewed with. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. So came back. Despite my best judgment, I said, I'm going to move to the snow. And dropped my notice. And, you know, exit interview. It was literally probably 10 exit interviews.
Oh, wow.
And they're like, hey, you know, why are you leaving? And I'm like, well, I keep applying to this job and you keep never giving it to me. So I think the writing's on the wall.
Yeah.
So 10 exit interviews later, they're like, well, what's it going to take? And I was like, well, here's my offer. I want this and this and this, and I want that job. Oh, we can't do that. And I was like, okay. Well, that's really great because I'm actually planning to move to New Hampshire.
Yeah. So.
No hard feelings. But they didn't like that. So on the last exit interview, I'm like, come on, let's just do it. And I'm like, here's the position. Here's their offer letter. Just match it and I'll stay, whatever. So they say never take that. I took it. But I finally got to move to product, which was where I really wanted to be. And from there, I want to say 6 years product. So in handguns. So product manager there is, you know, working up the new ideas, working up the business case, working as voice of customer to make sure that, you know, you're trying to check all the boxes. You let the nerds do nerd stuff, but, you know, keep them in the little box. They don't like that,
yeah.
But, you know, you got to give them some direction. And I was definitely not good at that job in the beginning. But my technical helped out a lot. And I did that for 6 years or so. So during that time, we did 509, which was just a spinoff of the MHS program that FN didn't win. Obviously, SIG won. That's a whole other podcast. But the funny thing was, little inside baseball on that. When we got the call, we're like, what? How did it, like, because the 509 that we submitted, we called the XM17. No bullshit. Lights out. Like, we had up in the testing phases of that. And the way FN works, right, is military has a requirement. Mm-hmm. It says you got to do this. All right, guys, we're going to build 10 guns and run the test exactly the way they do. They didn't roll into anything hoping that it would be okay. They absolutely knew it. But it was not uncommon. 25,000 rounds plus P. Maybe one malfunction. There's plenty of tests where it's zero stoppages. And that's what they were shooting for. And we knew we met all the requirements. And we knew we'd probably be a little expensive. But and MHS, we're like, okay, well, they should be at this phase. We made the first selection. And then, or I can't remember how it all worked. But we knew it was going to be, we had to watch out for SIG, Glock. We didn't think Smith was going to be able to make it. But we knew technically we were good. And we got the call like, hey, you know, we're going with SIG. And we're like, guys, there's a whole process. Like, what do you mean? And they're like, yeah, 9 digits. You're off by 9 digits. And we're like,
oh, wow.
Holy shit. Okay. Well, that makes a little more sense. And
it's a lot of digits.
Yeah, it's a lot
of digits. It's a big number.
The rumor, I don't have anything to base this other than like the rumor mill on that. But like, supposedly, like, SIG barely makes anything off the fucking military contract. They bid it so low.
I wouldn't doubt it. And I mean, later on in life, so the 509 was, you know, our submission. And then there was a couple big points. So, like, we submitted to, I think at the time it was, like, CBP. Mm. I think we were working on FBI. But in those kind of big situations, and it took FN losing a few times where they're like, hey, you aced the technical part, but your cost, like, and we're like, oh, buy the best gun. Money isn't an issue. Money is an issue to the government, right? So it's
on some things.
Lowest cost, technically acceptable.
Yeah.
Well, what's your level of technically acceptable? It all depends, right?
Yeah.
They know it when they see it. But they do write decent requirements. But anyway,
Because you can build the best gun that functions and does everything on it, but if you're 9 digits off, you ain't getting that.
Well, we heard everybody was 9 digits off. So it goes back to the lesson learned that we had, and I'm sure, you know, SIG was just way smarter at the time, and maybe they still are, I'm not sure. But here's the thing. If you bid it at the price that maybe you even lose money, let's say and this is, I can't speak for what they did, but we'll talk about it like a program that, you know, my fight to the CFO at the time and some of the internal people was like, hey, we want to win. I'm just going to make something up because I can't remember if it was FBI or CBP. Let's say it was FBI. Let's say we knew that in order to win that, I'd have to bid it at $200, say hypothetically. And it's like, you know, any finance guy would be like, well, $200, we might not make any money. And my response later, after I learned this, was like, does it matter? And they're like, well, what do you mean? Like, we wouldn't make any money. And I'm like, that's only a problem if we win. How much would you pay to win the FBI contract?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I don't know, $10 million. Okay, so if it's X amount of guns, you know, $10 million divided by that, that's how much you should be willing to lose. And I can't say that SIG did that, but that's how I would do it now.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem of we're not making any money on every gun we sell to the U.S. military or to the FBI or whoever is only a problem if you win. No one cares when you win, right? Yeah. Then you go, oh, shit, we got to start making some money, figure out how to make this cheaper. Yeah. Or probably what they did, if I had to guess, was, hey, even if they lost, I'm just going to make up a number, $20 on every gun. Well, if they make $150 or $200 on every gun commercially.
Yeah, they make it up.
It'll be fine.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised. And they were a lot smarter at their pricing strategy, I can tell you that. Yeah. So
if they turn around and make the money back up in magazines that they sell to the army afterwards, because they know, hey, we lost $8 a gun, but we're going to make $12 a magazine.
Absolutely.
Now you're making $4 in the whole grand scheme of things. Anyway, yeah. It's a whole craziness.
Lessons on how to sell guns to the government.
I learned about that later too, but that's a whole separate story. But anyway, so moved to product, and product was about writing requirements and building business cases and building teams and trying to get the right product to the right people, the right price. You know, if you go down to the four P's, trying to execute that within the bureaucracy that is, you know, FN America with FN Herstal and Browning and Winchester, et cetera. So that was my life for a long time, and got to what was great. Had a great team working on cool stuff, and that's where I got to see the other sides of the business. And that's kind of the end of where I was an engineer, honestly. So, but it was a good time.
And now you're with?
Now I'm with PSA, but there was an interesting jump in between. So I was at Staccato for maybe only like a year or something. But how I got to PSA, so I was at Staccato. So long story short, loved FN, kind of did everything there was to do. Starting to get a little bit bored. And my wife grew up in a small town in South Carolina. And she's like, oh, I want to move to a big city one day. She wanted to move to New York. And I didn't want to do that, but love my wife. So I said, oh, I'll figure it out. Staccato called Austin, Texas, way better than New York City.
Yeah.
So what's funny is she works for a school in Hoboken, New Jersey. So we went up there for a week, explored it all out, and learned that Hoboken, New Jersey absolutely smells like literal poop. So we were there for an entire week, flew out to Staccato, met the Staccato team, and she's like, babe, like, screw New York City. We're moving to Texas. And moved out there for, I can't remember the exact time, we'll just say it was a year. And she learned that she was going to be homesick. And then at that time, she had her aunt died, her uncle died, mom had surgery, her dad had surgery. We came home for Thanksgiving. And they were like, hey, you know, not saying we miss you, but we do. And if you ever want to move back, do you want this piece of land or that piece of land? So on the way home, because we drove from Texas to South Carolina.
Oh,
so
wow.
We had quite a drive on the way back.
So you had plenty of time.
But that's a pretty drive.
It's not bad at all. And I don't even think we made it to Georgia before, like, the 39-acre lot is the lot. Like, let's do it. So I love Staccato, and I love what they're doing, and I'm happy to see like a lot of the things that I was working on are like rolling into production now. But Austin was not a place for us. Like, it was great for a time, but you know, family's big to, you know, myself and my wife, and we moved back. I quit guns, worked at the airport, best job ever, because I did absolutely nothing except watch F-16s fly every day. I think I was definitely like in at 10. I could be in at 10 and out by 4 and be like the first in, last out on like multiple days. because the airport is like, I'm not going to say it's a joke, but it's a joke. So,
and that's why Ike's flight's delayed on Saturday.
Absolutely. But anyway, after like repeated phone calls, I think I was, so a good friend of mine was at PSA, and he still is. It's like, dude, just talk to him. It'll be great. And I'm like, dude, I quit guns. Like, there's nothing left to do. Not that there was nothing left to do, but when you work at a company like FN and you see SIG just crush, it was one time I beat them. And I was like, all right, I only beat them by like 3 months. And then the SIG machine goes on and then they win. And I'm like, okay. So they're impossible to win against in what they do. Now, I wouldn't say impossible, but very, very hard. Staccato, a little different, but same kind of customers. And I was like, man, SIG's going to win in the end. It's theirs to mess up on that type of stuff. And I still believe that in some ways. I think, you know, there's some holes, but they do an excellent job. So when I moved to the airport is when I said I was going to hang it up. Sarah, my wife, said I was extremely bored. I thought I was having a great time doing nothing, watching F-16s every day, but she said otherwise. And, yeah, so after, I don't know, repeated phone calls of, come on, man, PSA, it'll be great. You'll love it. And I'm like, man, PSA, like, what do you guys do? Like, assemble AR-15s? And they're like, just come on in. And then, no. Do you know that we have an office right across the street from the airport? Your commute wouldn't change. And I'm like, no, I actually didn't know that. That's interesting. Where do you live? Oh, I live in Chapin. They're like, do you know that corporate is like on the way home? So you could just leave work early and you could talk to the guys. So after like three interviews with the owners, they're like, I don't really know what exactly you do, but why don't you write a job description and we'll figure it out. And so I did that. And PSA is a monster, man.
Yeah.
It is a monster. Yeah. And so I quit guns, and then because I thought it was going to be really, really hard to beat SIG, and I got really tired of like getting so close and then another company like not having the balls to just like, there is a way to beat SIG. You just got to man up and go after it.
You just got to lose money.
It doesn't have to be that bad, but you do have to be pretty damn good. But PSA, completely different animal. I mean, we're all about like spreading freedom. You know, if you rewind the clock, and there was like an interesting interview that I wasn't sure about PSA, and then I saw what PSA was, and it is most people see it as like an e-com store, which it is. But what they don't know is all the other stuff. And now I learned all that. But when I was trying to figure it out, there was like an interview with Jamin. He was talking about like what he's trying to do. And it is probably like the best HR video ever, as far as like promotional hype of like, hey, you know, I'm just trying to make ARs common use and spread freedom. And everyone's like, oh, that's kind of bullshit, until you see, oh, wait, you know, they really do that. You know, there's times we talk about losing money. Like, we don't necessarily lose money, but like, we're not making that much money when it's $29.99 lowers.
Yeah.
But you know what? What we're doing is we're keeping our machine shops full. We're pumping out lowers, pushing it to all the people. And then, you know, one day they're probably going to come back to the website, buy a lower build kit and buy uppers and do all this and that. And at the end of the day, we'll make money, but we're not making that much money doing $29.99 lowers.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting business model. But if it's all about spreading freedom,
yeah,
how do you do it? Hey, how many lowers can you build every day?
I don't know what year it was, but I can, because it was either 2010. It was between 2010 and 2013, because I can remember sitting in the parking lot. I was a drill sergeant at Fort Leonard Wood, and I was sitting in the parking lot in front of like the main building, the in processing. I was doing something there where we went to do in processing shit, whatever. Payroll, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there, and something, I don't know if there was a school shooting or a sale or something, but there was a reason I bought 10 lowers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they were like $49.95 a piece. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I'll build 10 guns. Like, I wouldn't buy 10 lowers to sell 10. Five of them later on. That would not be what I did.
You do not look like an entrepreneurial spirit.
No, not at all. But I mean, like, I can remember buying, like, right there, sitting in my Durango, buying 10, like, boom. It must have just been everything in the cards. But that's 10 years ago.
Yeah.
10 and to 15 years ago.
We're still selling lowers, like, all day, every day at, like, $49.99.
Yeah.
You know, and it's crazy. So, you know, moved on over to PSA and thought I understood what the animal was. Rude awakening when you like peel back the layers of the onion and you're like, oh, the beauty is like insane on the business model, but most people don't see it. So like PSA, most people know us as like the cheap AR company. What they don't know is that we probably make parts for the premium AR companies as well. So, you know, going back to that time, you know, the quick little story on PSA. Jane was selling ammo online, you know, somehow locked in PSA.com. So Palmetto State Armory, but then we still own PSA.com. They try to buy it all the time is what I hear. But anyway, kind of lucked into it, started selling magazines. They accidentally shipped him some buffer tubes. He posted that online. He called them up and they're like, "Hey man, you sent the wrong parts." He's like, "Do you want them? Just make them go away. I don't really care." So I think he said he sold them out in like an hour, or maybe not an hour, but like very, very quickly. He's like, "Hey, send me more." And once he had buffer tubes, then he bought all the other AR parts. And then once you do that, you're like, "Oh shit, why don't I just build a gun?" And then fast forward into the funny ties of FN. So FN was going after like an M16 contract and N16 or M4, and they didn't win. And they were like,
M4.
Yeah. And Jamin committed to all those barrels. And then that happened right when you bought those lowers. So it's just been a happenstance the entire time.
I've been to the, I'm sure y'all have probably changed locations since then, but they're like the storefront.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there probably half a dozen times.
There you go.
Like to buy stuff because I was at it's not called Fort Jackson anymore. But whatever there
it's
is.
It's not called Fort Jackson.
I don't think, didn't they change the name of every fucking thing?
Yeah. I don't know.
You know, they made it politically correct. Yeah. So I was there for multiple times for training, and every time I'm in town, I was a shooter. So where did I go?
Go to PSA.
Yeah, in-store pickup, man.
Mm-hmm. There you go. But, yeah, so then when you peel back the onion and you feel, you're like, wow, they do all of this. So we make, not all of them, but we make our own forgings. We make our own bolts, BCGs, barrels, uppers, lowers, hand guards. You know, basically anything that's not commoditized, like, yeah, we're not going to make our own springs.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's okay. Yeah. But if the name of the game is all about spreading freedom, what happens is when there's a big run on guns, then the supply dries up.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, if we make a bunch of money during that time, we can invest it to build more freedom. And that's why you see some of the sales sometimes too, is like, hey, at any given time, we need to be able to like up the capacity. So the way you do that is not lay off a bunch of people. So, hey, you know, maybe we don't make that much money on AR lowers this month, like, but we're going to do a big sale and shoot it on an email and sell 1,000 in an hour or something like mm-hmm. that. So, but PSA, now we're integrating. So now what's great about it is PSA, everyone knows about the e-store. They're learning more and more about, oh, they actually own. So we have companies in Columbia, South Carolina, where you were at, Charleston area, Jacksonville, Florida, up outside Charlotte, up in Minnesota. So I think we might be in the process. Well, we are in the process. I don't think it's final, but we're picking up a couple more companies out in the Southeast, but Kentucky and Alabama area. And just trying to build up our supply base for business as usual. But when it's time to like an event happens and somebody needs to just put the foot on the gas and make sure we can sell as many of these things in case something happens.
Yeah.
We're there to do it.
So were you involved in the Dagger?
The Dagger was before me. So, okay. You know, I've been on about a year and a half now and really I just focus on building the team.
Yeah.
So the big thing that we're trying to do really is change it in the hearts and minds. So when I watched that video, Jamin, I was like, guys, you need to like put this out all the time. Like, I think there's a bunch of people that are about supporting our, you know, constitutional freedoms and supporting, you know, 2A in general, but actually put their money where their mouth is. Very few do that like Jamin does. It's, you know, some of the behind the scenes stuff is, you know, we're helping fight the brace ban stuff. We're doing the bump stock stuff. Like, we have the money to put behind it. Now, in the end, does that help our business? Sure. But is it the right thing to do? Absolutely. So for me here, what I'm all about is building out the team. So guns that I've actively worked on that you guys see, a lot of the concept guns. You know, I had a little finger here or there. But what we're trying to do is, how do you get more people like me, the guys that had, you know, we've got a couple guys with 20 years of gun experience. You know, one of our guys spent 5 or 6 years at HJ, 2 or 3 years at FN, Christensen, DPMS, Savage. You know, we working with Mac at a HMG for the STG. Again, a bunch of guys from FN. They may or may not love me some days, but at the end of the day, I feel like you either want to work for a military contractor or you want to build commercial gun spread freedom. That's us. So how do we get the best people to build the best products to get them to the customer so we can spread more freedom? That's what I work on. And you kind of see that down at the booth. So
cool. I'll definitely have to swing by if I get back on the floor.
Swing by later in the afternoon. It's been quite busy. So you guys might, if you do swing by, definitely check out. So what we're doing is, like, in my opinion, I've been to not as many. There's definitely been to people that have been to way more SHOT Shows than me. But after, like, your fifth or sixth one, you get kind of bored. Like, it's all the same stuff. So we're trying to make the show fun again. So we look, so when you go down there, you'll see we probably have 15 concept guns. And the idea behind that is, like, car shows are fun. Mm-hmm. Car companies bring out all these cool new things, and, like, they don't do half of them. But, like, you got to have fun with it, because if you don't, then, like, everything's a Toyota Camry.
Yeah.
So we have, you know, the MP7 at home down there, the Scar 17 at home, the, you know, how do you make a Dagger compact size, you know, a G19 and 10mm? Not the world could maybe use that. Why not? Like, let's just, we just kind of throw everything at it, have fun with it. You know, we've got build your own bolt gun, build your own shotgun. That is core to at least how I see PSA. You know, the easiest way to spread freedom is, like, make it ubiquitous. Well, when you bought those 10 AR lowers, what if we did that for everything, you know? In theory, what if we sold you a pump shotgun receiver for, I don't want to make up a price, but let's say it was under $100, yeah, and you print copies of that. Well, now pump shotguns are ubiquitous, which they kind of are as it is, but I think we could have some PSA fun with it. So if you go down to the booth, tons of concept cars. And the idea is, you know, we've got links on online and, like, on our social, like, hey, vote your top three. And what we're trying to do is engage the public so that they can be part of the design cycle, the feedback loop. Hey, which one should we be working on? You know, we just break all the rules because why not? And what's crazy is, like, the best voted gun, and I'd have to pull it up. I think it had over, like, 20,000 votes already, was the, what we call the X57, which the joke is, it's the MP7 at home. Mm-hmm. That was literally an idea 3 weeks ago. And it was just like, hey, let's pour gas on it. Why not? What's the worst that happens? What's the worst that happens is now everyone's like, hey, you're going to do that now? And I'm like, I
guess.
Yeah, so. We can't not, because this is right. What the people want. And it's pretty cool. Like, I'm not going to lie. I even want one. I'm a snob. So now we're going to chase after that. But, you know, in order to do that, you need time, people, money. And we don't have the time. We'll spend the money. Now it's about getting the people. So I'd love for you guys to come down to the booth and just kick the tires on the concept cars.
It's pretty
cool.
I'll definitely swing by.
But it's all gas, no brakes over there. It's how do you, what rules, you know? PSA doesn't have rules because we weren't even a gun manufacturer, really, like 10 years ago. When you're assembling ARs, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. When you want to build a Dagger, which is, you know, our G-Lock at home, that's it's a whole nother game. And now we're getting people, I think, well, you know Jordan, right? Mm-hmm. So brought in Jordan and bringing in some high-level technical guys to just, you know, building guns for defense contractors is fun. It's one thing. But what's the gun you always wanted? Why don't we do it? FN isn't going to do it. That gun. SIG, probably not going to do that gun. But if the people want it, how do you engage more people? Get them in about freedom. Make the guns they want. Listen to them.
Make an SCG 44.
Yeah, right.
Like,
that's just for the love of the game, man.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do all the projects for the love of the game. But at the end of the day, if we make a few dollars by the time that project's over, did the world need it? Maybe not. Does Jamin want it? And do a lot of people think it's really awesome? Yeah. So, why not?
Yeah.
You know, and that's I don't want all the projects to be that way. You obviously need big money-making projects, too. But if you can't engage with the people and have fun with it, why not? Because how many AR-15s do you... I'm not going to say do you really need, but, like, I got a stack. And after that, you're like, all right, I want to have something fun now.
Yeah, we've had this conversation like today.
Checked that box a couple times. You know, I need, what's the next thing I can get? Yeah.
We've had that conversation multiple times in the last week.
Mm-hmm.
Not really? Last year. Like, when's like, I'm working on trying to get, you know, A1 carry handles, mm-hmm. like, for us. And it's like, the last thing I need is another flat top AR,
mm-hmm.
you know?
I mean, that's why we have a brand, H&R. You know, we're bringing them back, and just to do stuff like that. You know, I think Brownells dipped their toe in it. I think they were just a little early, right?
Yeah.
If they were working all that work now, probably be pretty great. But how many flat top ARs? You know, maybe A2.
Yeah.
Get the proper rear sight, but
yeah.
No, it's just all about spreading freedom, driving innovation. We were joking, like, somebody made a joke that there's like more innovation in this booth than anybody's seen at a SHOT Show, like multiple SHOT Shows in a row. And I'm like, well, don't worry, we're not actually gonna make all this tomorrow.
Yeah.
But which ones do you like, which ones don't you like? And what's funny is the one I thought was gonna be number two is actually like number six.
Oh wow.
So it's interesting. It's cool to get that feedback. So but
no. Yeah, that's one thing you really don't see at SHOT is like a lot of concept stuff. You know, it's all like, hey, this is what we're working on, it's coming out later this year. You know, there's really no like, hey, we're gonna go test this out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what y'all are doing, you know, like the car industry does it, like you said. I don't think I've ever really seen that at SHOT.
No, a lot of people say they're gonna do it, and like, this is one thing that I'm trying to push internally for our guys is like, we're not going to do all of these. So, like, the best, the hardest part is setting clear expectations, because there's going to be a guy that absolutely wants, there's, you know, we have 15 concepts and or something like that. And, you know, the top one might have 100,000 votes by the time we're done, but the worst one will have 87 diehard fans that are like, this is the gun I've always wanted. We absolutely have to do this.
I mean,
and letting them down easy, you know.
We had to. Pincus had his concept pistol a couple years ago.
Oh,
remember that?
Yeah.
Just never seen it.
It's, no. I've heard it's still in the works.
Yeah, it's still in the works.
It's been in the works for
quite a long time. A and time. It's been surpassed now.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, we're guilty of the same thing, and I know exactly the gun you're talking about. But, and I'll just say it. So right now, we are not working on an MP5. So, and everyone's like, why not? And I'm like, well, the Turkish guns are pretty good for like $800-900. So we can't do all of them for the love of the game. So,
yeah. How's
that,
the dagger's done pretty well for y'all?
The dagger is doing really well. So that's our 15-round, you know, 3.9, 4-inch gun. You know, you can imagine what that is.
Yeah.
It's similar to a 19. But we actually just launched, I want to say a couple months ago, what we call the Micro Dagger, which is, you know, the 43X at home. But what's awesome about that is the magazine. So basically when we do the pistols, particularly the inspired by some other companies ones, it's like, hey, how do you do all the things? If you took this platform, you said, hey, I really wish it had this, 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 and this, and this, and fix that. Basically all the things the aftermarket does. Why don't we just do it? Because we are the aftermarket, really. So that's been, like, insanely hot for us. We can't make enough of those. And, like, I want to say still the ones that are posted. So we try to build like 100 or two a day right now. But they'll still sell out in like an hour. And that's tough. So
how many daggers do you think you sold? Like if you had to guess just within a couple hundred thousand,
a few hundred thousand. I don't think somewhere in there.
My brother-in-law bought one and he loves it.
Yeah. I mean, it's
timed well with the whole P80 issue mm-hmm. and debacle there. Which was not P80's fault mm-hmm. whatsoever. Thank you, ATF. Because we love you. Disband
it. They're doing it for the love of the game, man.
Yeah.
Different love.
Yeah.
Different game.
It's a different game. That's the thing. It's funny because like I think this year now everybody's got a Glock clone. Like, mm-hmm. But no, there's hundreds of thousands. I don't think they've hit a million yet.
That's
still a lot.
Just came out.
It was like a year or two.
Yeah. Just came out. That's
but
crazy.
Well, you can buy like a built frame for $49. Like it's in the why not category. And it's not $49 all the time, but I think I've seen them on sale down there.
Yeah. I mean, if it's $50, you're like, why the hell not? You know, kind of like the lowers, you know, at $50, that's a small enough amount that that you can be like, yeah, I think I'll go ahead and get
I can't
that.
Even like eat like lunch at SHOT Show for.
What
that
is a,
price.
What does a whole PSA dagger cost off the website? Like a complete.
I don't know. I have to pull it up. It's probably in the daily email here. Let me check my email.
I should check because guess who's on them.
I also noticed you're a no caser. Live dangerously.
Oh no, it's the way to go, man.
Apple care.
So I used to have those like peel or whatever the really thin cases are.
Yeah,
and I'd break one like every 3 weeks. I'm like every 3 weeks I'm spending $20 or for like $200 for like a couple of years, you get the insurance. And I'm not going to say I would do this, but if it got really scratched, I accidentally
PSA dagger compact.
I dropped this hammer on it
with RMR slide barrel, 15 mag. Is there nothing this doesn't come with? Do not go on their website.
It doesn't come with an RMR, does it?
No, but it comes with like 10
and stuff.
10 mags. Jeez.
Wait,
how much is it? Yeah, I pulled that. What is
it? It comes with 10 mags.
This one's out of stock, so it's not going to give me a price.
So you got a...
$419 for a PSA compact, 9mm extreme carry cuts, RMR slide, threaded barrel, suppressor height, night sights, and a black PSA soft case. For $419.99.
Oh, that's a more expensive SKU. I mean, and I'm looking at.
Yeah, it's night sights and or.
Yeah.
This is a our 5.7 pistol, which is actually, if you guys haven't messed with one of those, check that out. I've obviously shot a handful of 5.7 pistols, but even some of the Belgian boys are like, oh shit, this might be
$359. That's a 3.69.
This is the R57 pistol, threaded barrel, optics ready, 359. And
might need to buy a dagger just as a burner.
Yeah, a little bathtub gun.
Yeah.
How many rooms of the house do you have?
Yeah.
It's a couple. I know that. And so let's see what did we have. Hit the website.
So the one came with 10 mags.
There was a special. It's out of stock.
It was a gun and 10 mags.
A gun, 10 mags, a bag. You know, it was like a bundle deal.
I mean, that's sweet, though. I mean, to get 10 mags.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Probably still less than $500, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, based off the price of the other SKUs.
Of everything else.
Oh, here's...
Because, you know, like...
10 mag... Yeah, 10 mag bundle for $469.
With a gun.
With a gun and 10 mags in a case.
It's like sold.
Yeah. I mean, you can't get
you can't get 10 Glock mags for that. I mean, 10 Glock mags would run
a couple,
you
about 260
bucks. $300.
I mean, those are Magpul mags, but still.
Those are what? 10, 12 bucks a piece?
Yeah. Well, they're more than that.
$15 a piece?
Yeah. So this is, what is this? This is a threaded barrel RMR cut, $359. I mean, it's why not money. You know?
Yeah.
And that's what it's about, like spreading freedom. And is one of the things that was interesting. I was like talking to Jamin one day, I'm like, why do you do this? And it's like, well, when I was a kid, like, I always wanted all this stuff. And, like, now I can afford anything. And I'm like, yes, I know. You just showed me the Han Solo blaster. I did get to hold it. Super awesome. Then I saw the price, and I was like, oh, shit. I probably should have worn gloves. So you can buy anything you want. Buy nearly anything he wants gun-wise. He's like, yeah, but everyone should have this. So it's projects like the Dagger and the AR-15. Like, those are the ones that, you know, there's definitely, if you're an AK nerd, and, you know, that's one of the things Jordan's actually helping is, like, cleaning up our AK stuff. So some of it's clone craft, some of it's not. But there's definitely AK models where I'm like, why the hell do we do this? And they're like, you know exactly why. And I'm like, it's a gun Jamin wanted all the time. Yeah. And he's like, yeah. And that's what the Chinese Spiker was about, you know. So one of, you know, and it was like one of the coolest AKs, one of the guns he always wanted. And I'm like, okay, well, you could go buy that. And he's like, well, everyone should have one. And I'm like, all right, I guess we're doing another AK. Yeah. Why not? And, you know, now you guys are going to see the Trink. Yeah. And that's what Jordan's working on. And,
oh, nice.
So that's, it'll probably, I don't like saying dates, but it'll probably ship next month.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's coming up.
Yeah. Very cool. The idea behind that was, you know, kind of starting. Obviously, it's, you know, it's the gun everybody wants, which is one thing, but it's also what we're using it for, the new team, at least, you know, because we've essentially, when I came on, we haven't completely turned over the team. I don't want to, but the team is absolutely nothing like what it was when I came on. And it's, hey, here's how it could be better. And I know historically PSA's like caught a lot of crap for, oh, it's cheap, there's quality issues, this and this and this. Are we perfect? Absolutely not. Are we better than we've ever been? Probably. You know, but in a lot of cases, people just don't realize. And they're like, oh, I saw three bad comments on the internet about PSA quality, and I'm like, you guys have no idea how many we build, do you?
Yeah.
They don't. And like in a lot of cases, like, our rates are like below 0.1%. But when you're doing thousands a day, you're gonna get a gun or two a day. And we obviously are trying to drive that to zero. But what Jordan's working on is how do you take that on the AK, and what is the AK that certain people would just be like, yeah, why buy Russian? Well, you can't, but
yeah.
this is just as good, or in a lot of cases better.
Nice.
So it's pretty cool. Having fun.
That's neat, man.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I'm looking forward to that. That'll be neat.
It's been a very enlightening podcast.
Yeah, a lot of stuff to look forward to. Now, I've been seeing a couple of like the polls online, you know, on Facebook and stuff. Mm-hmm. I need to go out and go downstairs and check.
Yeah,
check it out in person.
Definitely check it out. And I mean, and what we're trying to do is capture that feedback. So if there's anything you're like, hey, this is really awesome, but this, don't do this. Yeah. Like, you're the 17th person, and I will let the engineer know I was right. But there's definitely times where like, no, this is going to be a great idea. And I'm like, dude, no one's going to want that. Turns out the thing has like 17,000 votes now. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, shit, I don't want to do that gun, but it's what the people want.
So yeah.
We'll end up doing some of them. But no, it's been fun.
Well, yeah, thanks so much for coming on and taking some time to, you know, come talk to us about all this. And
yeah, I feel like I just ranted.
No, I learned quite a bit. This was very enlightening. This was cool.
I feel like we could do like two more episodes on tangents on SIG
and
how to sell guns to the government. And
well, rule number one, like, if you want to sell guns to the government, definitely sell guns to the government. Don't wait for them to tell you what they want.
Yeah.
No, you got to work ahead on that stuff. But no, it's been fun, and definitely appreciate your guys' time and having me on. And, you know, I don't want to give the pitch, but at one point, definitely check us out. And what you guys will see is like my goal for PSA over the next 2 or 3 or 4 years. And this is how you sell guns to law enforcement. You take every reason why they don't want it, and you just knock them down one at a time. So what we're doing here at PSA is like, why don't you buy from PSA? Well, because of da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. All right. Well, we're working on our quality. We're working on our engineering. we're coming up with cool shit. Like, does anybody, like, I'm not going to say do they need that, but it's like, oh, well, it's okay to just do guns for, like, the love of the game. Like, the SDG, it is a heavy pig. Is it reliable-ish? It's not M4 reliable. Do I absolutely get the biggest smile every time I shoot that gun?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, 10 minutes later, I'm like, this gun is heavy as shit. How do I put an optic on here? Velcro. Side rail or something.
And you get memories of invading Russia.
Well, I mean, we just need the right movie.
Yeah.
My SP5s absolutely come out every Christmas day. And we watch a movie, and then maybe I shoot them, maybe I don't, but is that so wrong?
No. You know,
so have That's a little cool. fun with it.
Well, yeah. We appreciate it, man.
Yeah, no, it's I appreciate your time.
Yeah, for sure. And if you stuck with us this whole entire time, we appreciate you listening to the podcast. Check them out over at that other place called PalmettoStateArmory.com. Wait, yeah. Is it y'all? Y'all don't have PSA.com.
No, we own PSA.com.
You own PSA.com.
Okay. So I think it forwards. So yeah. if you can't spell Palmetto, if you go to our booth, it's funny. They couldn't spell Armory, but then, oh. I don't want to dig on too hard.
That's cool.
Whoever did the graphics definitely forgot the Y at the end. So oh. It's Palmetto State Armor.
Like, okay. Cool. So, well, like, now I'm going to be looking for it. Yeah. This is great. Oh,
no, it's tonight. Absolutely. I literally was like dreaming. Did we get into armor? And like, did we fuck up?
Is this the April Fool's booth?
He's sitting there. He's like,
oh, I bought Hesco. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Well, we are now since they messed up the table. Anyway, thanks for watching. Check them out online. Let us know what you think about this episode in the comments. Hit us up in our new Facebook group. Actually, this is probably not a new episode. But anyway, we might be on V3 of our Facebook group. I don't know. Depending on what Zuck feels like in 2024. Thank you for listening. Do you have anything for the people?
Make sure you get your eyes checked every year. It's good for your health.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
There you have it.
Astigmatism is a bitch.
It is. Be careful with red dots.
Be careful out there. SHOT Show 2024.
Yeah. Wear your compression socks, drink your vitamins. You'll be fine.
Oh, you're at that age, are you?
Fuck yeah.